It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and lots of things in the news that have something in common. The Boston Marathon, the shooting of some people at a church in South Carolina, the massacre of innocent people in San Bernardino, the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, most recently the New York bombing, and yes, terrorism, but all these things that have one thing in common, it's a lone wolf. And we are on the line right now with Jeffrey Simon. Hi, Jeffrey. How are you?
Fine. Thanks for having me.
We haven't had time to read your book because we didn't get it in yet. But the book, Lone Wolf Terrorism, Understanding the Growing Threat. This is a big problem these days.
Oh, absolutely. You know, for a long time, the focus in the counterterrorism community and policymakers and military was on the organized groups, the large scale groups such as Al-Qaeda in the earlier days, the PLO, and now recently ISIS. But the lone wolf has shown to be very effective. You know, the individual terrorists, they're not part of a group decision-making process, so they can think up any scenario they want and act upon it. They don't have to get approval from higher-ups. And the other thing that distinguishes the individual from the group member is that there's no constraints on their level of violence. You know, the lone wolf, whatever political, religious persuasion they may be, are not concerned with alienating supporters that would be some terrorist groups. They're not concerned with the government crackdown. And also, because they work alone, it's hard for authorities to learn about the plots. No members to arrest, no communications to intercept. And more importantly, in recent times, we've seen a number of mentally unstable or emotionally disturbed lone wolves, yet they're still very effective.
What's their gripe usually, Jeffrey? Is it just with society in general? What do they tend to be so upset about?
It's a whole range for what I call the idiosyncratic lone wolves, those who really don't have the political religious agenda. They just sort of latch onto something. It is the anger at society. It's the anger for maybe being wronged in their life. But then there are others who could be the true believers. They actually do get persuaded from the calls from ISIS to take action, you know, in their home country. Or in the case of the right-wing neo-Nazi type of lone wolves, they're part of that whole, you know, ideology. So as much as we want to have like one profile or one type of lone wolf, it just isn't the case.
All right. And, you know, we get rumblings when there's ISIS threats going on. But the lone wolf terrorist makes it very difficult to pinpoint when and where. Bill and I were just talking about this the other day. It's so random. You have to live each day like it's your last because you don't know when it's going to surface. What is being done or how can we find these lone wolf people before they strike?
Well, first, I mean, that's a good point in terms of, you know, the fear element, but we can't live our lives that way. That's one of the things the terrorists want. And still, every individual, the chance of being a victim of a terrorist attack is incredibly small. But there are measures that are trying to be taken to try to improve our ability to prevent these kinds of attacks, as difficult as it is. For example, in terms of package bombs being sent through the mail, like the Unabomber used to do, we've had a lot of improvement in detection devices in post offices. Expansion of CCTV surveillance cameras in public settings helps identify lone wolves after an attack, as occurred in New York. But hopefully, as the technology improves, there'll be these preventive measures. You can have real-time CCTV. You see individuals putting a suspicious package in a trash can. You can then perhaps alert the authorities, and something could, you know, be prevented. We're also, you know, the whole thing that the NYPD says, see something, say something, increase public awareness. But trying to find these early warning signs is an ongoing battle.
But now, with see something, say something, this Ahmed Rahami from New York, his father actually called and said there was suspicious behavior and perhaps some connection to terrorist groups. And that was several years before this happened. Was anything done that you're aware of? And what can be done when that phone call comes in?
Yeah, well, in that case, it was followed up. He was interviewed, and the FBI did, you know, some preliminary investigations, but they concluded that basically he wasn't connected with any terrorist group, and he wasn't the threat. Now, more information may come out in the coming weeks, and there even may be investigations into what went wrong there. But many times, the lone wolf does fly under the radar. In the case of the New York incident, he didn't. So there was something where the father did say something, you know, and call the police. He then recounted and said, basically, you know, he's not a terrorist. I was just saying he was hanging out with the wrong crowd. But he had traveled to Pakistan and Afghanistan. So in his case, there definitely were preliminary early warning signs.
Jeffrey, with your average, and I don't know if there is such a thing as your average lone wolf, but if you're looking at the numbers, do most of them want to stay private and alone, or do they hope to be a part of a larger cell?
Most of them will try to be incognito for a certain point, but what they want to do is sort of boast about what they're going to do. So example is that we think most lone wolves are totally alone, yet they like to talk, and they do their talking on the internet. So most of the lone wolves I've studied have posted Facebook blogs or engaged in internet chat rooms. But the problem is, how do you separate those individuals who are just expressing freedom of speech and maybe having certain, you know, extremist ideology statements from those who are actually going to follow through with an act? Now, some of the lone wolves did want to go over to Syria and Iraq and join ISIS, but others are just taking the call from ISIS to take action in their home country. And I look at it as almost like spam email. ISIS perfected the art of just sending out a message to anyone anywhere saying, take action, whether it's knives, as we've seen in the case of Minnesota, mm-hmm. or in France when you use the truck, or IEDs, as in the case of New York. And you just need a small percentage to take that bait to be effective.
And lone wolf terrorism, but it turns out that they have others helping them as well. Isn't that usually the case? Like family mm-hmm. members?
Sometimes, not totally. There's what we can call the lone wolf inspired terror. So they're inspired by ISIS. Sometimes we've had, like in the Boston Marathon bombing, two brothers acting alone. So I basically expand the definition of lone wolves and call that a lone wolf attack. The same thing in San Bernardino, a husband and wife team. But when you have family members either turning the blind eye or helping without actually knowing what they're doing, that's sort of a different case. But there have been a few incidents where you had friends and relatives helping the main perpetrators, and then it's becoming sort of a mini type of a cell.
Jeffrey Simon is our guest. His book is called Lone Wolf Terrorism, Understanding the Growing Threat. When they catch one of these lone wolves, like Rahimi the other day on the East Coast, the first thing they do is they question him to find out if he has any affiliations to any other larger terrorist groups. Are they relieved to find out that he doesn't? How does that play among the FBI, the CIA, anybody questioning him?
Well, probably in the case if there aren't any ties, they're relieved in the sense that it doesn't show it's going to be an ongoing threat from that particular individual. It's also, you know, bad news. It just shows that here we have somebody without any affiliation able to perpetrate an attack. But if there are affiliations, they then try to track everything. Was there any logistical help? Was there any money trading hands? Was there anybody else, you know, involved in this? But basically, for most of these lone wolves, when they're caught, they do not find, you know, an affiliation with an overseas international terrorist group.
Now, in Minnesota, too, last weekend, the stabbing that happened didn't kill anyone. People were injured. After that happened, ISIS claimed responsibility. Why should we believe that? I mean, can ISIS just, I guess they can do whatever they want, but can't they just say, oh, yeah, oh, sure, that was our guy?
Oh, sure. I mean, when they called him a soldier of ISIS. And basically, they're saying he heeded their call of doing anything, you know, anywhere to, you know, advance the cause. So in Minnesota, we had knives, you know, being used. And in that case, there's been no, to my knowledge yet, any communication between Adan, I believe his name was, in Minnesota, and ISIS. So ISIS, though, also, as any group, any terrorist group, they also have to be careful. They don't want to claim credit for everything, because if it turns out they do claim credit and then there was no connection at all and it just was clear the person wasn't even inspired by ISIS, they basically lose face. So what they try to figure out is, okay, he was signaling out non-Muslims in his attack, and he shouted something about Allah. So they figured, okay, we can claim, you know, responsibility here for inspiring him through our call over the internet. And that's the other thing we have to realize: the internet's really the game changer. The internet provides individuals with, you know, incredible access to information on targets, tactics, weapons, ability to become radicalized through chat rooms, through, you know, email interchanges and things along those lines. So ISIS has perfected the art of using Twitter, Facebook, and blogs to recruit all these individuals, and recruitment used in a general sense, just having somebody they don't even know about taking action.
It's still strange, though, that ISIS would worry about their image. You know, you think you're ISIS, you're a terrorist group. It's strange that they have PR issues. Strange.
Oh, they totally have PR. I mean, they have, and Al Qaeda had a PR unit, and they still do.
Yeah.
You know, terrorist organizations are they're very sophisticated. You know, they're not like the popular image of just some, you know, ragtag group doing violence, but they're concerned with who they're appealing to, and you know, they don't want to be seen as, you know, they were wrong about this claim, so they take some consideration before they make that claim.
So what can be done to kind of police the internet? Nothing at this point, correct?
Well, you know, there's certain, you know, we have the freedom of speech, so you're allowed to say something on the internet and blog thing, but at certain points, when you're calling for extremist action, that can raise red flags. And it's a really difficult challenge we're facing. The most difficult thing is identifying what those tipping points are between somebody who's just espousing anti-government sentiments or saying, you know, ISIS is this and I support ISIS, to those who are actually going to follow through with an attack. So there's a lot of work trying to be done on the analytics, on, you know, the cyber experts to try to see, are there ways to cipher that out? But right now, it's just very difficult. There's just too many potential lone wolves.
Our guest is Jeffrey D. Simon. His book is called Lone Wolf Terrorism, Understanding the Growing Threat. We'll continue this in just a little bit. If you'd like a question or a comment in, 312-981-7200 will get that done. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, we are talking terrorism. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and Jeffrey D. Simon on the line with us, an independent security and terrorism consultant, visiting lecturer in political science at UCLA, and his new book is called Lone Wolf Terrorism, Understanding the Growing Threat. Now, Jeffrey, when we were talking before, you had said something like you have to try and identify the tipping points for some of these lone wolf terrorists. What do we need to look for?
It's still not certain exactly what these tipping points are. Some of these signs are radical changes in behavior, significant changes in behavior. So a number of lone wolves, after the fact, their friends said, well, they took a trip overseas, and then they came back, and we saw a definite change in the behavior, more extremist views they were saying. Or there are certain experiments with some weapons. You know, in the case of the New York attack, apparently, even on a cell phone image and a video, he was practicing setting off, you know, an incendiary device, and everybody was kind of laughing at that. So those kind of things.
Is that something to laugh at? I understand it was a relative's phone. I mean, at some point, would that be paranoid to call somebody and say, my cousin's acting really weird, he's just blown up phones? I mean, in this day and age, isn't that something that needs to be reported?
Yeah, definitely. But then, you know, it's a dilemma for the family member. You know, in the Unabomber case, the brother actually helped turn in Ted Kaczynski. After the manifesto was posted in the newspaper, the brother recognized Ted Kaczynski's style of thinking. And so, but before he went to the authorities, because, you know, he doesn't want to tell him his brother, he wants to make sure his brother actually is doing these, you know, horrendous package bombs, he had, you know, analysts, private investigators look at the, you know, information, and they said, yes, this is similar. So then he went to the FBI. It's difficult still, you know, for a family member or friend to tell another friend. But in this day and age where we're seeing these things happen, you have to sometimes make that tough call.
Do you think, in your opinion, Jeffrey, that this guy, Ahmed Rahimi, considered what he did last week to be a success? He didn't kill anybody. Everybody knows who he is now. He's been nabbed. He's behind bars. Was that a successful plot carried through by him last weekend?
Oh, I think he thinks it was a success. You know, he got all the publicity now. He got his message out because they found the notebook where he had certain slogans and certain, you know, sympathy for various, you know, the Islamic extremist causes. So in that case, I think he definitely thinks it's a success. He apparently, from the notebooks, wanted to commit some type of a suicide attack or be killed in the process, but then you wonder why he did not. So I think in his own mind, he probably was conflicted in terms of the ultimate goal.
I would imagine a lot of these people are conflicted with, sure. you know, what they're thinking and what they're doing.
Right. But, you know, we also have to realize, because there's so much attention on, you know, the Islamic extremist lone wolf, this does cuts across the whole political and religious spectrum. You know, we've had right-wing neo-Nazi lone wolves. We had an anti-abortion lone wolf, Eric Rudolph, who set the bomb off at the Atlantic Olympic Games. You know, we've had anti-Islamic lone wolves, such as Breivik in Norway, who massacred more than 70 children. So the lone wolf, you know, can be of any type of affiliation, any type of ideology, and that's what makes it so difficult. And unfortunately, we really can't think that there's going to be some kind of a solution to it. In a way, it's sometimes easier to handle and deal with the organized groups because, you know, you have a structure, or even if they're decentralized, try to intercept their communications, look for chatter on the internet, look for various type of things. But the lone wolf is very, very difficult.
Does today's political climate aggravate the situation a bit?
I don't necessarily think so, because we've had the lone wolves during so-called, you know, off-election years, non-politically, you know, high-profile periods. You know, the lone wolf has come through every different period in our recent history. So I don't necessarily see, you know, the political climate. It can influence certain individuals, but there's still others who are working oblivious to it.
And as you pointed out, not all these lone wolf terrorists are people from other countries. There are some within our country as well. Just today, an email was sent at my son's high school, and all I saw was hard lockdown. And I freaked out, and then I proceeded to read more, and it was hard lockdown drill, which makes a big difference. But that's what your eyes go to right away. And what is being done at schools and businesses to help protect ourselves from this?
Well, I think every school now, or lots of them, are having, you know, the active shooter training in terms of what the individuals inside, the students, should do, you know, in terms of locking the doors, and then for, you know, the administrators, what their procedures should be. So there's, you know, an awareness of this. But, you know, unless we're going to have all kinds of physical barriers and metal detectors at every school everywhere, you know, we're still going to have that kind of threat. But there's definitely, because of all the incidents, which aren't necessarily terrorism, but, you know, we've had a number of school shootings, because of that, there is a heightened awareness throughout the country on these issues. And for law enforcement, there's a lot of training in responding to these incidents quicker and how to handle it. So improvements are made along those lines, but we still, unfortunately, have risk of those kind of attacks.
Can't wait to read it. Lone Wolf Terrorism, Understanding the Growing Threat, Jeffrey Simon. The book is available at Amazon, your favorite bookstore. Is there a website that we can find out more information on you?
Yes, thank you. www.futureterrorism, FutureterrorIsm.com.
And we'd love to keep in touch with you and talk to you again in the future, because unfortunately, I don't think this stuff is going away, and I really appreciate your intelligence about this whole thing. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thanks, Jeffrey. Have a great day. We'll take a quick break. Steve with the news, and then more show. It's Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder on WGN.